This is Parenting Q&A Podcast, Episode 3. We're on Episode 3. This is Debbie Vallejo, and I'm here with Anne-Marie Lindick.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. We are here to ask a question today, and our question is part of our Foundation series. This is the first 4 episodes of our Parent Q&A podcast, and these are foundationally going to be a part of all the different series we do. And our question today is, how do I view discipline? That's our question. And so just as a recap, remember there's episode 1 and 2 before that if you haven't listened to yet, we would encourage you to go listen to those first. These 4 build on each other. We define some things in the first 2 episodes that we feel like are important to understand moving forward. And then we're going to do the same here with episode 3 and then again with episode 4. We just recommend listening to these in order. After this and each of the series, you'll probably be able to pick, you know, and choose between different things that maybe pertain to you more than others. But for these first 4, we really recommend that you listen to all 4 in order, if you can, if you can do that.
Yes.
So, Anne-Marie, our question is, how do I view discipline? And this is as me as a parent. How do I view discipline?
Correct. And I think, again, this is one of those questions we sometimes just live out of a response, and we don't have to really think about what is my discipline philosophy. And so one of the things that we're going to use then is just let's define the word discipline. And it comes from a Latin word, which I'll probably say wrong, disciplina. We'll go with that.
Disciplina.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Put the Texas
in
it.
D-I-S-C-I-P-L-I-N-A.
It was used to mean teaching, learning, and giving instruction. And so in a quick, short definition, we would say discipline means to teach. But in our mind, in our culture, when we think about discipline, we tend to think more about punishment. And there's a difference between discipline and punishment. So we're going to be talking about what is then your philosophy on discipline, on teaching your children, which will include behavior and consequences, but it's bigger than just behavior.
And I think it is important to understand too, as parents, we may have a particular philosophy in our head that we think that we agree with, but our parenting responses, reactions, and prevention techniques are actually from a different philosophy altogether. We may be acting different than what we say we actually believe. But you have a few points, Anne-Marie, that you think we should cover, so why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, I think that when we're not really thinking about it, we kind of just live in what we call survival discipline. This is kids act, adults react. Kids act. And then they just constantly go back and forth. It's like this rinse, lather, repeat kind of parenting. And so that means we find ourselves spending the majority of our day thinking about what consequence, along with a healthy dose of yelling, can go with that behavior that can stop that behavior from happening. So it's our primary go-to discipline strategy. And whether it's whatever kind of thing that we think of as parents, you know, whether people are using timeouts or taking away privileges, grounding, our goal is cooperation. That's survival discipline, which is different than thriving discipline.
And thriving discipline is what we would rather have.
Correct.
So explain thriving discipline.
Well, this is thinking more about not just stopping a bad behavior or promoting a good behavior, but we're also wanting to teach skills and nurture the connections that will help them make better decisions and handle themselves in the future. So one of the things that I think is really important for us to realize is that when we have a tendency to say, okay, I want to control a situation, and especially if I have any kind of fear, I want to control a situation. As my control increases with consequences and punishments, my connection to my child is decreasing. And when connection is decreasing, communication is decreasing. And our ability to influence and change the heart is also decreasing. So when we think about thriving discipline, we want to think past just looking at the behavior. And we are not saying that behavior doesn't matter, that this is the same as permissive kind of parenting.
We're not saying that at all.
Because it is very biblical that we think about the fact that God has boundaries in our lives. God gives us consequences to our choices and our decisions. That's very biblical. And so we want to do the same thing with our kids when we are disciplining them. But we also want to be looking at past just that one behavior and asking ourselves, if I believe all behavior is a form of communication, what is my child communicating to me in this situation? And then what skills do they need to be taught? What things do we need to do? And if I am just given a consequence or just yelling, then those opportunities are being missed. So that would be my summary of what thriving discipline would look like.
And because we want more thriving than we do just survival discipline, which there may be a season of survival off and on. That is just reality. That is realistic. So we're not sitting here saying that you're going to sit in that thriving feeling, that thriving structure all the time. There are seasons in our life that are difficult. But then next to that, we have grace-driven discipline, which feeds kind of our philosophy altogether. We talked about that in the previous episode, the difference between an ownership model and an ambassadorship model of parenting our children. So when we have a grace-driven philosophy towards discipline, we remember that the process of training and discipling our children and disciplining them, we are to have a posture of love and grace as we do that, which means the consequences even that we're giving them, the external ones, are a part of that. So if I'm merely disciplining because I'm upset, I'm reacting to something, I feel like I'm supposed to give a consequence that's heavy enough to change this behavior as quickly as possible, I will respond in a way that is not grace-driven because it's about more what I feel, what I think, what I want in my home. But grace-driven discipline is not about being permissive, kind of like Anne-Marie talked about. Obedience and respect are all important. We know that. God talks about that. It's a very biblical understanding that children are supposed to obey their parents. And we're going to talk about that some more in the next episode as well. So we don't want to respond as if understanding boundaries in the law are not important. They are. Okay. But the difference with grace-driven discipline is you're not focusing on the law alone, because we're understanding that there are things that only grace can provide. This is the whole reason Jesus came. If the law alone worked, we wouldn't need Jesus. So if we're using the law alone in our home, then that's not grace-driven discipline. If we're then pushing our consequences more to push the laws that we want to see followed, then we may find ourselves in trouble because we're going to lose that connection to our kids that only grace provides. And so that's kind of the truth that we have, that we need to understand the rhythm of our home ought to look different than the rest of the world, right?
Right. And I think that as you're talking about this, one of the things that we are growing in as parents then is this concept of I know that I understand the difference between surviving and thriving, but how do I do that? And those things are exactly what each of our episodes going after this foundational one, we're going to be talking about more specifics and giving you lots of practical ideas on how do we make that shift from surviving to thriving. But the first part before you can ever make a change is to understand, hey, I have a tendency to kind of live here in survival mode. And a lot of times for very good reasons, right? You have young kids and you're really tired, or, you know, you're feeling very alone in this process. And it's very easy to have, like you said, seasons in our life where we feel very survival mode. But even in those seasons, we can take a look back and realize that, yes, my child needs a consequence. Yes, they need boundaries, but that will not change their heart. It absolutely cannot change their heart. And if that was the case, Jesus wouldn't have to come and die for us, because law in itself cannot change the heart. And heart is what the change in the heart is, how our behaviors will change long term. We might be able to get a short term change, but we're not going to get a long term change if we're only focusing on those consequences. So the truth is that those moments that you're just trying to survive are actually opportunities to help your child thrive. And we're going to look at some traps here in just a minute, and we'll kind of go through some of those examples, but it's kind of a mindset change a little bit on how we think about discipline and not just thinking about behavior modification.
And then kind of our last point we wanted to cover over the big picture part of this is we understand coming in that the way we discipline as parents is absolutely impacted by our own family of origins. And the fact that we're imperfect people, married to imperfect people, raising imperfect children, that's a lot of imperfection moving around in the house. That's a lot.
And the more children you have, the more imperfection.
The more imperfections in the mix. And then you add friends and school, and there's so much going on. But our families of origin of both parents play a big role. And my family of origin plays a role in how I discipline. And so understanding that, whether or not I have trauma in my background as a parent, whether or not I was based out of shame. And so I felt a lot of shame growing up, whether my parents were very authoritarian. So maybe there was a lot of spanking in the home. Maybe they were overly permissive and they allowed a lot of freedom. And now I'm scared of that freedom and I don't want to allow that to my kids. So I've gone the other way. Or maybe I was raised in a Christian home, but then my parents said it was a Christian home, but the way I felt treated growing up did not feel Christ-like. So now I'm confused as a parent. What is good and what is not? Maybe I was abandoned as a child. A parent left me and did not spend time with me. And there's abandonment looks a lot of different ways. They could still be in the home and just not spend time with you.
You just didn't have connection with
them.
Didn't
have connection. And that those reasons in particular will impact me as a child and now me as a parent. And so, and then there's also maybe a healthy model. You're like, I had a great life growing up. It's amazing. And I have it on this pedestal. And I don't want to look at the imperfections my parents gave me. Because there are some, believe it or not. Even if you had an amazing childhood, you love your family, you guys are connected really well. We raised our kids. Amory raised our kids. And believe me, they aren't perfect. And we aren't perfect.
No.
So,
and there's totally everybody has that. Those.
And our husbands aren't perfect either, no. Believe it or not.
If I could do it differently, I would. We all everybody have
that.
Has those.
Yes, we all have that. So what are some traps we see we fall into, kind of some broader traps we fall into when it comes to discipline management in our home?
Well, I think a big trap is fear. And fear can be lots of different things. Fear of my kids making mistakes that are going to really harm them, whether it's even when they're little, when they, you know, they might fall, they might get hurt, they to when they're older, like, you know, they might get pregnant, they might, you know, do drugs. There's lots of different fears that come into our parenting, and they show up in so many different places. And sometimes we're just not even aware how much that fear is kind of inside of us. But because of that fear, we will try to control situations in a way to keep that situation from happening, whatever it is that we are fearing.
That you're scared of.
Right. And so we will find ourselves trying to give a consequence or a threat that is big enough that will make a change happen or prevent something from happening. If we can give that threat equal enough to be able to make that happen. Sometimes too, we find that yelling, it gets results. And so it's the only way my kids tend to listen to me. So I just find that I'm just going to keep on doing it. If I can make them fearful of me, then I will be able to get the behavior that I'm wanting. So fear is one of those traps. It's a power tool that we can find ourselves getting into.
Another power tool is environmental control. That's a big one. So fear is one. Environmental control is somewhere a lot of us go based on fear or our desire for our house to look and respond the way we want all the time, the people in our house and our home. And so we can try to control the environment in such a way that either one provides very little room for anybody to make decisions in our home. So our kids are not going to make a decision to upset us because they know how much we value controlling our house. So that's even fear. They don't want to make us angry, right? Because they've stepped out. The other thing we do is we're controlling the environment in such a way that doesn't put any pressure on our kids. We're making decisions for them. We're making them very comfortable all the time. And so because they're comfortable, anytime they feel uncomfortable, they don't know what to do with that because they don't feel that very often because we don't allow the pressure in to where they're faced with a decision that is maybe complicated or harder to make than you would typically let them do. So you just want them comfortable all the time. And the other thing is probably rewards, right? External, though.
Right.
External rewards.
Right. Well, let's go back to that environmental control. I think a good example might be, you know, those terms we've talked about before about like helicopter parents.
Totally.
And, you know, to where we're trying.
Lawnmower
mm-hmm. kind of parents. But, you know, we've talked before about a new type of parenting, which is the snowplow.
That's right.
Right. And so give like an example to a parent who's wondering what environmental control looks like. So what would be an example of something that a parent might do in a...
That's a snowplow?
Snowplow.
A snowplow parent. So a snowplow parent is going to, if a child says, you know, this homework is too hard, I don't like to do it, or I have to write this paper, but I have this game, right? So a snowplow parent's going to write the paper. They don't want their child to even have to go through the discomfort. And believe it or not, I know parents who have done this.
Right.
I know parents who have written their college kids' papers. And so that is a snowplow. That's a snowplow, right? A helicopter is my kid's kind of in trouble, and I'm going to run in, and I'm going to rescue them from a teacher being up, you know, giving them a bad grade because they didn't get their homework assignment in on time. That kind of thing. Even though in Frisco, a lot of that's changed because you can turn your homework assignments in whenever you want.
You can keep on retaking that.
You can keep on keeping on. There's all different views of that. But at the same time, we are still trying to control the environment around our kids versus walking with our kids through the pain of their decisions, walking alongside them, not saving them from it, but instead saying, I'm going to get in this with you. This is uncomfortable, but I'm going to help you kind of figure this out and learn from this so next time looks different. But that means we have to feel their pain.
Yes.
And we don't like that either. And a lot of times we're just as scared of their pain as we are of anything physical, any physical discomfort. So those are just kind of some random examples.
You know, and that can start so early. You know, I know it's really hard with when our kids are really little and we're still learning in this parenting game, but it can, you know, like, that's the thought that nobody else can take care of my kids, or I can't leave my child with somebody else because they might get upset. They might be sad, or I don't want to send them to school because they're going to be upset when I leave them. And all those things are just natural fears. And we don't want our kids to experience those painful things. And so we don't allow the opportunities for them to thrive. And so that is really where we're, want to help us start thinking about where do I try to prevent my kids from having opportunities to thrive. Yeah. So you said rewards. And so we're talking about those external rewards that we might use to get the kind of behavior that we want or change in a behavior that we want.
So this, and we're talking about external rewards, just to clarify right now, as a trap.
As a trap.
It's not like they're always bad.
No.
But we can fall into them as being rewards and punishment being like the only tools in our tool.
If you think about rewards as being if rewards is a big part of my philosophy, then I think that I can manipulate them enough through a reward to get to the behavior that I want. And again, rewards are great for short-term change, right? But rewards do not change the heart. It actually grows in them a sense of entitlement. That's where I do not have to change unless you're going to give me something. And I will change for the period that you want me to. So for instance, if it was saying, you know, if you can just be nice to your sister for, you know, I'm tired of having to deal with you guys fighting. If you'll just be nice to her, then by the end of the week, we'll go and do something. And your child might be able to do that really well for a week until they get that reward that they want. But that's not the change that you're wanting in them. The understanding that, hey, God cares about how I treat other people, and that matters to Him. And I want to see a change in my heart for that feeling to be something that's internal, that's not going to be only going to happen when we have some kind of manipulation. So when we can easily start falling into this bad habit of using manipulation because it does work at times. So it's where we find ourselves always giving in to giving our kids treats when we go to the store, or you know, you can get this lollipop if you can do this. And it's just because it's easy. But the problem is your kids age, the cost to be able to get them a reward that's actually going to be motivating to them is impossible.
Very difficult.
Right? When they're little, a sticker will do a lot. A piece of candy will do a lot. But when they're teenagers, a sticker isn't going to do anything. And so
And I think too, it's important to understand the purpose of everything you're using, right? And we're going to talk about this again. We keep saying future, but there will be other niche times we discuss it, because there are times where a purposeful reward works.
And like potty training.
Yes, like potty training. Those things that are momentary. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to get especially a young child to understand the importance of responding a certain way in a particular moment of time. Like, I need to go to the bathroom. It's important to go to the potty instead of going in my diaper, right? I'm trying to transition that. There's also times where we have younger kids that discipline has become a very big issue, and you're looking for incremental changes. Which are kind of the kiddos I used to work at. We used external rewards a lot, but the whole idea was you use those for a while, they're purposeful, and then you are working off of those.
Right.
They are not forever, but you need incremental changes because their behavior at that point is so drastic. They can't even understand or hear the messages about the heart change part. So there is a time and a place. We're not saying they're bad all the time, but natural consequences of rewards and that are intrinsic,
right?
Are better.
The feelings that I matter, I'm important, I'm successful.
Points.
Exactly.
That's what you want to be moving. That's what we want as parents to be moving our kids into, are those connection points. So we just don't want to fall into the trap where external rewards are what we depend on to get positive movement and change in our kids. So the last one, I think the last trap we thought about, Anne-Marie, that's big with parenting is shame and guilt.
Yes. And this is a power tool because kids have a natural desire to have a relationship with us. And so when we use shame or guilt to motivate them to change, we will see change. They want to please us. They want, for the most part, they want to please us. They want to make us happy. And so it's easy for us to find ourselves shaming and guilting our kids into misbehaving. The problem with shame, though, and the problem with guilt is that it puts all the focus on their behavior has to make me feel good, that they're responsible for my feelings and my responses. And that's just not true. And that's not effective in our parenting, but it's an easy trap that we can find ourselves in.
Yes.
We do want our kids to experience the kind of guilt that brings confession and repentance, right? There's a difference between
conviction.
Yes, thank you. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
Change between conviction and guilt, because conviction and shame, right? And we do want them, because they do, as what we're saying is, it's not the fact that rules and law are going to change them. Rules and laws are important because it shows us where our sin is. But it is the understanding that our need for Jesus is what actually changes us. So we want them to feel the conviction of sin, and we want them to be able to change that. But I think this kind of leads into the next topic. And, you know, we said that discipline means to teach. One of the traps, though, then that comes with teaching is using too many words.
The lecture.
Dun, dun, dun. Dr. Phelan from Magic 123, he's an author, and he calls it the little adult assumption. And that's this idea that if I just talk enough, they'll be able to understand, and they'll be like, oh, I see the error in my ways, parents.
You're so right, Dad.
Right. And so teaching, I have used this illustration before, but I do think when we think about wanting to teach our kids truth, you have to think about a water bottle. And if you were to pour a big pitcher of water into the water bottle and you did it in a kind of quick motion, most of that water is going to come out and it's not going to go into the water bottle. The way that you fill the water bottle is by pouring just a little bit at a time. And so when we think about wanting to teach our kids truth and teaching them things, then we want to think about that illustration. We want to do a little bit at a time. We don't want to find ourselves using huge, long lectures. And this will come in a lot when we start talking about emotional meltdowns in our next series and tantrums, because it actually feeds those tantrums when we use too many words.
And if you're using too many words, and that's all the time, if you're using too many words with a preteen, it feeds into that high emotional kind of involvement. If you're using too many words with a teen, it feeds into their anger and their bitterness. And if you use too many words with an adult in a lecture, it feeds into apathy and it feeds into anger. And so too many words in the lecture is not ever a good thing. And if you look at how Jesus, again, discipled his disciples, he used questions 80% of the time. 80% of the language he used was in a question format. So we'll talk about that more, of getting to the heart of kind of our behavior, in episode 4. And so, using too many words is another trap, and then inconsistency can be a trap, because consistency is kind of key to effective discipline. And part of that consistency is modeling the behavior that we want to see in our children. Trying to say, do as I say, not as I do, is not a good thing. It is best if we can, as much as is possible for us, is to follow in the footsteps that we're wanting our kids to walk in. If we're not able to do that, then we need to ask ourselves, is what I'm asking of my kid unrealistic if I can't even do it myself?
So don't yell at your kids to stop yelling.
That's right. So it is super important to understand what I'm modeling to my kids. Am I actually actively walking the way I'm asking them to respond and to behave? So those are the traps. Now we're going to talk about the tips.
So one of the books that I have enjoyed learning from is a non-Christian book. It's not a Christian author's or perspective, but it's called No Drama Discipline by Daniel Siegel and Tina Bryson. And they do a really good job of having this conversation about discipline and rethinking the form of discipline and understanding how our kids' brain works. And I think having knowledge and understanding things gives us better ability to change some of our reactions. So we did talk about this.
We did.
In a different podcast on Noisy Narratives, way back on episode 31, wow, which has been a while.
Yeah, that's been a while, but so still, they can look them up if they want.
If you'd like to go back and listen to this conversation a little bit more, or check out the book even better, I recommend that one.
Okay, that's awesome. And then in addition to that, we're kind of saying, so one of our tips is read No Drama Discipline or go listen to that podcast. Another thing is ask yourself some questions. Begin kind of that introspection now. That's what these first foundational episodes are all about, is looking at ourselves as parents. So some of the questions we're going to recommend are, why do my children do the things they do? What happens before their response or their disobedience? What is the antecedent that builds up to that? And then the other thing I need to ask myself, actually number two, is what am I modeling to my child?
Correct.
What am I demonstrating in my own behavior? And so those two things are super important. And then third, what is the change I want to see happen in my child's heart? And we need to make sure we understand how that happens, and we'll probably get into that more. But what is the change you want to see? And then how can I be a tool to that change? How is God calling me to respond and parent and disciple my kids and discipline my kids in such a way that brings about the heart change that is more valuable than anything else? Because that will change behavior. Out of the heart comes all the behavior and choices we make. Our beliefs, everything drive those choices. And that includes our kids. So what is it telling me? What is it communicating to me when my child responds a certain way? So we are just thinking, that's probably a good tip at this point in the series, is to kind of ask yourself those questions and kind of journal some, maybe write some down, write some of those responses down so you can kind of see, does what I'm modeling kind of reflect my philosophy of parenting? Do those things match or not?
Exactly. So, a little introspection also into our conversation about family of origin. I think this is just to think back, like, how was I disciplined? And what parts of the way that I was disciplined, or some of my experiences that I had growing up, how is that being translated into my own parenting? And the conversation even to talk about with your spouse, as to kind of like, how were you raised? Did your parents yell? Did they, you know, sometimes parents, when we're mad, we just get really quiet, do the silent treatment and all those kinds of things. How did you know you were in trouble? What kind of consequences did you have growing up? Those are good conversations to have, and just to kind of think about, how is that being related into my own parenting, good and bad, in both ways.
That's good. So those are our tips. Read No Drama Discipline. ask yourself those questions and do some kind of some heavy looking into your family of origin drivers and what's driving your discipline from that area. Okay. And then the truth recap, the truth we're going to talk about today, we're going to end this podcast with kind of the truth. Couple things is, number one, discipline's not equal to punishment. That is true. They are not the same. God disciplines us and gives us boundaries and consequences, but it is such a way that provides heart change. But he still gives us the dignity of our own choices, our free will that God provided back in Genesis to all human beings. Our kids have that free will too. So our discipline philosophy should focus more on kind of teaching and training and the things, the positive changes we want to see in our kids, and then modeling those positive changes ourselves.
That's exactly right. So let's end with some scripture here to encourage us. When you read in James chapter 1, you'll find James is describing some trials and temptations. And I think we could all agree that parenting is full of trials and temptations.
Yes, it is.
And in verse 5, we hear a great promise that we need to remember. It says, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. So part of those tips we talked about means we need to be praying and asking God these questions, because he promises that if we ask him, how can I do this different? How can I do this in a different way? He promises to give us those answers, and he gives them generously to us. So I hope that you hear that with encouragement and not condemnation.
That's right. Always encouragement. And our next episode, episode 4, the final one in the foundation series, is going to talk about what or who do I allow to influence my parenting? So that will be the next one that you'll see coming up. So, but that's it for this one. We hope you enjoyed episode 3. We hope it was encouraging and helpful. We will see you next time.